Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's chant from the Sadhana Chaturshtiyam Kim down all the way through Mumuchu Pum Chaiti.
Sadhana Chaturshtiyam Kim.
Nitya Nitya Vastu.
Nitya Nitya Vastu.
Vivekaha.
Iha mutrartha
phala bhoga
phala bhoga
viragaha
viragaha
samadhi shatka
samadhi shatka
sampattihi
mumukshutvam
cheti
cheti.
From the previous verse, it starts with Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampanna Adhikarinam, for the adhikaris who have this, for this wealth of this fourfold sadhana. So the, this is something that you will memorize: Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampattihi or Sampanna. It can be the Sampattihi. Sometimes you'll say Sampanna. It means the same thing. So Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampanna or Sampattihi. The one, the adhikari, is one who has these fourfold sadhanas, means these dispositions, qualities of the antakarana, a certain maturity, a certain, as Swamiji would call, a certain grown-upness. So, what we as human beings can mature into. and so we went to, and this is how this whole Tattva Bodha works. It'll take like a whole sentence and then say, well, what does that word mean? What does that one mean? What does that one mean? So it starts, Sadhana Chaturshtiyam Kim. We did that. What do you mean by this phrase, by this compound, Sadhana Chaturshtiya, this fourfold wealth that the qualified students, the adhikaris, are supposed to have as their own? So the first one we looked at, nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekaha. Nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekaha. Later it's going to ask, what is nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka? But here it's just saying, how do you translate, what does this mean, nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekaha? So most of these words you know now, viveka, means that discriminative analysis where there's a confusion between two things that are existing in the same place at the same time. Right? We use the analogy, which is often used, of the red-hot iron ball. Right? And so that confusion in terms of ourselves is the confusion of myself, my being, the confusion on the part of the mind because of the ignorance, the natural beginningless ignorance that the mind suffers from. You know, because it doesn't get to be ignorant, it doesn't know myself, so there's suffering. That's where all of the suffering comes from, actually. And so that viveka is a discrimination, you know, an analytical, discriminative knowledge between myself, who I actually am, and the things that my mind has taken me to be, as superimposed. My mind has been superimposed on myself. My body has been superimposed on myself. So there's a confusion there. The word viveka is always speaking to that confusion, a discriminative analysis between two things, three things, four things, whatever, that have been confused, mixed up. So here, it's the confusion is what? So there's what do we need? What needs the viveka? The viveka concerns nitya, anitya, vastu viveka. Remember the word vastu means literally just in common parlance. Vastu is a thing, anything. This is a vastu, this is a vastu. But in the end, the word vastu has only one meaning because really there is only one vastu. Because everything in the creation comes into being and goes out of being, which, you know, certainly compromises its reality since it's bordered by non-existence on either side. And in another sense, everything in the creation is really just a conglomerate of many rupas, forms within forms within forms. So this, the vastutvam, the state of being of vastu, is really nitya. It's not really the truth of things. But within just common parlance and are just negotiating in the world, vastu means a thing. In the end, vastu means Brahman, the absolute reality. So here, the discrimination is between the nitya vastu and anitya. What is anitya? What are the anitya vastus? Because there are many. Anitya means non-eternal, temporal. Those things that come into being and go out of being, those things that are bound by time, are anitya. Anitya, time-bound, means they come to an end. They take a birth, they come into being, and they go out of being. That's what we mean by time-bound, temporal. So anything that is time-bound is anitya, non-eternal, temporal, certainly not timeless. It exists. Another way for anitya, all things that are subject to change that exist within time. So anitya is an important word, right? Nitya is the opposite. So nitya, anitya. Remember that if a word begins in a consonant, if you add the letter a, it will negate it. So nitya means that which is timeless, free of time. So that's nitya. What is not nitya is anitya. Okay. So nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. What has to take place here, if we say tatva viveka prakaram from the previous verse, we will teach you vakshamaha. We will teach you the tatva. Tatva is the absolute reality, that which is nitya. We will teach you that tatva viveka prakaram, the method for this viveka. How to teach? How does the teacher teach the student this viveka between what is nitya and what is anitya? What is the methodology? What is the teaching methodology of the Upanishads that has been passed down from beginningless time? So nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. This discrimination between that which is timeless and that which is time-bound. For the mumukshu, until the mumukshu knows the mumukshu, nor does any being really who is not a jnani, does not know what is nitya. Because nitya, what is nitya, doesn't exist within the creation. The creation, absolutely everything that exists is anitya. It comes into being and goes out of being. There is no nitya here. There's only one nitya, and that is me. That is Brahman. That is the tattva. The absolute reality is nitya, is timeless, is free from any type of modification, is not bound by time and space, is not bound by the universe, is not subject to any change whatsoever. That is Brahman. That Brahman needs to be discovered. The tattva viveka prakaram, the teaching methodology for the discriminative analysis of this nitya, which is the tattva, that which is tattva, the absolute reality is tattva. It is free from time, free from change. So that prakara we will teach you. So nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka, the question, okay, what is this nitya, anitya, what is this? First, what is the sadhana chaturshtyam that you're talking about, these fourfold attributes for adhikari? The fourfold, what are the fourfold? Well, the first one is nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. What is the second one then? Because there's four. Repeat after me. Iha mutrartha Pala bhoga, pala bhoga viragaha.
Viragaha.
So here's the sandhi. Iha amutra. So a plus a is a. So iha mutra. Then, so iha amutra. Then amutra plus artha. You know, a plus a is a. So iha artha. Iharta. So iha mutrata, iha amutra arta pala bhoga viragaha. Viragaha, the word viraga is the same, has the same meaning as vairagya. Vairagya is actually, viraga means dispassion. Vairagya is that state of having dispassion, right? That it becomes a abstraction. So vira, but we use both words, viraga or vairagya. They mean the same thing. That is translated as dispassion. Later we'll have to see what this dispassion means when they really go into defining these terms. So here, there is a viraga, a dispassion for the bhoga. Reading on compounds usually, in, when you translate to English, and I'm not sure about Swedish if it's the same. Usually these Indo-European language has the same kind of sentence structure. But for us in English, if you read it backwards, it would be the viraga, the dispassion for the bhoga. Now, the word bhoga can just mean any experience in general, but it also means enjoyment. Like with the enjoyments, the things we want to enjoy, those are our bhogas. So a viraga, a dispassion for the bhogas, for the enjoyments of the palas. Kapalas mean karma pala. A pala means literally a fruit, like a fruit from the tree. A fruit is a pala. And so we have this, we also use this in English. Well, you know, that's the fruit of your actions. Okay. So pala means literally a fruit. It also means the result of an action, the result. So the karma pala is the result of your actions. So that karma pala, can the fruit of your actions, can be in the form of your prarabdha karma. The whole prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this birth and take you all the way through your death, this karma pala, you know, is the fruit of your previous karmas. The previous karmas have attracted, and then at the time of your death, the previous karmas of your previous life attract the sanchitta karmas, all of the karmas that are there in your file. It's an infinite amount. At that time, these karmas are attracted to create the prarabdha karma for you for your next birth. We'll get into that in great detail in this text later. So that karma pala can refer to the prarabdha karma, the karmas that are exhausting themselves right now and will take you from birth to death. That's why people say, well, this is my karma. You know? Or what good karma? You know? What you mean is how did I get to have this wonderful experience? What great karma, you know? Or how did I get to have these beautiful little ones? What amazing karma, you know? Or it could be, well, it's my karma, what can I do? So karma, we're talking, when we say that karma, we're talking about karma pala from the sanchitta karma that is exhausting, is manifesting now based on my previous karma. Okay. Or karma can just mean I've done this action, I'm doing these actions with the hope of getting this result. I'm doing these karmas, these actions, so that I can have this. So it's just the regular use of the word karma in the sense of I want this and I'm doing this to get it, right? So here it says there is a viraga, a dispassion toward the enjoyment, the bhoga, of the fruits of my karma, right? The fruits of the artha, the fruits of my karma, the fruits, which are those arthas, those things, here and iha, here and amutra, in the heaven worlds. So iha, here itself, amutra, in the heaven worlds, the artha, the objects. Artha means meaning. It also, an artha is a mean, the meaning of something. It also means the purpose of something. It also means an object, is the artha. So the word artha, if you look it up in the dictionary, has many meanings, and we also use it in many ways. So here it says, the dispassion for the enjoyance of the fruits of my karma, of objects which are born of the fruits of my karma, of artas, of objects here and in the hereafter. So iha, amutra, artha, pala, bhoga, viragaha. You have to memorize that. So exactly what that means, I'll just do a little bit because we'll have much more on it in a couple of, just in the very near future here, when they start to define it. But one thing to just say, what do they mean by vairagya or viraga or dispassion? What does that mean? Well, for a mamukshu, remember there's an order here. When we say the sadhana chatushtya, the normal order, first in this order is the viveka. A discrimination arises, you know, for the nature, the discrimination regarding the anityatva, the state of being temporary, that temporal condition of everything in the world. So that means that every karmapala, the results of all of my actions, no matter what they are, that result is temporal. It only lasts for a certain amount of time, because there's nothing in the world, or any world, nothing in the creation itself, which is free of time. And that is true, which is different from, I think, Judeo-Christian religions, I'm certain of it, in terms of Christianity. We don't think of the heaven worlds, or like going to heaven, as being a temporal condition. You have this one life here, and based upon your actions, your dharma, your goodness in this life, your freedom from sin, and if you're Catholic, from mortal sin, you're depending upon how you've lived your life will depend upon whether you go to heaven or hell. And when you go to heaven, you don't come back. When you go to hell, you also don't come back. For the Christians, they have this purgatory. It's like instead of going straight to heaven, you have to do some tapas in this middle state called purgatory before you have enough purity to go to heaven. So this is it. One life, which will result in eternal heaven, or purgatory and then eternal heaven, or eternal hell. That is it.
Scary.
And only one time. You get one chance. That's it. Very frightening, actually. What you have to do is push it aside and not believe it in some way or another. Just swallow it. It's got to go. So anyway, that is not the belief system in 66% of the world. 66% of the world population does not believe this. Okay. And that's encouraging. in the Vedic cosmology, that is not what it is. Every karma is itself limited. Even a whole bunch of karmas put together can only give a limited result. There is no such thing as a limited karma giving a limitless result. And so if you spend your life, say you want to, because there's 7 lokas up and 7 lokas down, 7 worlds up, 7 worlds down, the highest is the Satyaloka. Say you wanted to go to the highest heaven world, and that was your commitment in your life, in your whole life, really. Your commitment was to get to the Satyaloka. You would spend your life doing upasanas, doing rituals, doing prayers, also doing all types of dharmas that include all different forms of charities or serving, all different forms of service, whole life would be devoted for that, for one life or two life or three lives or 10 lives, whatever it takes, to get the tremendous amount of punya in order to give you this rather lengthy vacation in the highest loka. It is a lengthy vacation because where all of your needs and all of your desires are satisfied as you get them. And so, in fact, when a desire comes and is satisfied as it comes, your mind never has any worries, no stress. None of the negative emotions have any need to rise at all. And so you live in a state of ananda, where the mind itself, there's ajnanam, ignorance, but the mind itself is complete and body. There's no aging. This is all the how they talk about. There's no aging. The body is at the prime of life, at its most healthy in the life cycle. It's at its most healthy, and it stays there. It's most beautiful. It's most healthy. There is never any thirst or hunger or disease. Thirst or hunger or disease of any kind. There's nothing. You're missing the sword to look at. There is no thirst or hunger or disease at any time, no aging. And so this is, for some people, this is their desire. This is what they want and what they spend, the whole life is spent working for that through prayer and upasana and that different meditations, etc. Living a dharmic life and all of that. But even that, even though it lasts for a really long time, it lasts until the end of the kalpa. So if you think if you realize that from a Vedic vision, the creation manifests, is sustained, and comes back into unmanifest condition over many millions of years. But say you go to Swargaloka in the middle of this process. Now you have half of that kalpa to go, which itself could be a million or so years to live. But the Swamiji will say, at the beginning, that is a long, long time. You know, just like here, this 3 months. When I first got here, I said, well, 3 months is really a long time. That's a long time to be away from home and to be a changer. That's a long time. But so whether it's 3 months or a million years, time, the flow of time passes, and then you only have a few days left, you know, no matter what. And there's only a few days left. And then that vacation time or whatever definitely comes to an end. And so here, that viveka for the mumukshu is very well known, very well understood in terms of the anitya nature of whatever you do. Whatever you do, whatever you work for, whatever results that you get, they are anitya. They will come to an end. And that knowledge brings about, or naturally brings about, what we call vairagya. Because vairagya means a dispassion, in the sense that I am still, no matter what the joy or the beautiful experience is, I am still caught within that samsara chakra, that which is continually changing. And so any ananda, any well-being is something which is time-bound. And so at the end of every experience is the dukkha yoni. And I would like to be free. Can I just be the fullness, the full, complete, whole being that I actually, on some level, know that I am? I know that I am that because I've had glimpses of that reality, of the fullness, the naturalness, the wholeness of my being, but it continues to evade me. But then when I recognize it, when I have those glimpses, this is me, this is who I want to be, this is who I am, why does it continually evade me? You know, I want to know, I need to know. And so that desire to actually be that without and being encumbered by time, by change, causes me to have a vairagya or not as much enthusiasm about my gaining temporal satisfactions. I may go after them still, but they have this kind of lack of enthusiasm that used to be there, because it's like the drowning realization of the drowning person. When they're up for air, they know after some experience, some assimilation of experience of what drowning in the ocean is like, they start to get an assimilation of that experience, they recognize that this is a temporal condition and there's nothing I can do to stop that. So please, Bhagavan, please send a boat, send somebody to pick me up and take me to the shore. I cannot do that myself. Guru is the boat coming, picking it, taking to the shore. That's the moksha. But nothing else now is going to really solve the problem, because I've recognized, though I don't know the anitya. I know this anitya, this temporal nature of the world. I know it really very clearly, experientially. I do not know what is nitya, if there is a nitya. If I have grown up in India or in a Vedic culture, I know from the culture, I know from reading the Upanishads or from even reading the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, all of the stories, there is something called moksha. There is something called Brahman. And that is what I need to achieve. I just don't really know what it is. You know, I can even read and be told by my parents and be told by my teacher that Brahman is the one non-dual, you know, non-dual, limitless consciousness that pervades and is the truth of the whole universe. And you think, I would like to know that. You don't think, okay. And you are that Brahman. I would like to know that. I would like that moksha. Because you have the word. And you have the meaning of the word as liberation or freedom from suffering. And that the true nature of yourself is Brahman. You have all of these words, all of these concepts. You don't have knowledge. For a Westerner, we don't really have the words. We have to gain the words, but that viveka is still there. That vairagya, you don't need all of that. You still, the viveka, you still recognize everything is anitya. All the pola, everything that I achieve is anitya. It's time bound. And so what I want, I recognize, I don't want that. You know, I don't want to just be okay for a little while. I want to be okay, period. You know, I need to know myself, that one who is okay completely, who I've had glimpses of, but that those glimpses continue to fade away, and I try to catch them and it just gets worse. As you're trying to catch them, they go more quickly away. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it. Okay. So, iha mutrata pala bhoga viragaha. That's the second one. The third one is this that is here in this previous verse. The third one is shamadi shatka sampatihi. Say samadhi.
Shamadi. Shamadi.
Shatka.
Shatka.
Sampatihi.
Sampatihi.
Remember sampatihi, or sampanna, either way you see it, sampatihi. That means that wealth, something that you actually have. You have this. The Shama Adi Shatka. Shatka means a group of six. Right? Like Chatushtya means a group of four. Shatka means six. Sixfold. So this sixfold wealth. Shatka Sampatihi. Shama Adi. Beginning with Shama. This word Adi, it means like we would say etc. So if I were to say shama, etc., right? Shama, adi, shama, etc. That shama, you know, is going to stand for a group. Like what if I say your eyes, etc.? the eyes would stand for the group of the sense organs. Right? So when you see Adi, it really means the first, beginning with Shad, with, you would say the first, you know, the first beginning with that which begins with, that which begins with Shama, you know. And so when you say that, then, so Shamadi Shatka Sampatihi, you have these things. You have this sixfold group beginning with Shama. And so we'll see in a minute what that sixfold group is. For those who know it, I'll just rattle it off. Shama, Dhamma, Uparati, or Uparama. Shama, Dhamma, Uparati, Titiksha, Shraddha, Samadhanam. That's the group. So now this sixfold group, we're going to be looking at one by one by one. Since they say the word Shama, I'll just tell you briefly what Shama is. Okay. But we'll see it in a moment in terms of how they define it. Shama is that beautiful quality of mind that you'll find that you grow into. In fact, something to just bring out here, this sadhana chatushtya, this group, fourfold group of sadhanas, the sadhana chatushtya sampattihi, or sampanna. A mumukshu comes with these fourfold attributes of mind. Attitudes, dispositions, attributes. The mumukshu comes with that. To a degree, you have enough of these fourfold qualifications to be a mumukshu. But all of these qualifications, you will find yourself growing into until they become absolutely natural to you. Just a quick example to go back to the nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekaha. We don't know what nitya is unless you know the word Brahman, that Brahman is nitya. But what that means, what it is, you don't know, because that's not your direct immediate experience. You just have an indirect knowledge that there is something that is free from time. And that something, you know, is something that for liberation, I need to recognize that myself, that the Atma is that timeless Brahman. But that timeless Brahman, I know the words, but I don't know what it is. Right? So what I do know experientially as a fact is the anitya, that everything in this world is temporal. That I know experientially as a fact. I have nishta. I have clarity around that. The nitya, that there is such a thing, I know in the Vedic, within the Vedas, that there is such a thing, but I don't know what it is. When one reaches maturity in terms of their knowledge, both are completely known. Nitya, I know with clarity, it is my own immediate experience as my own nature. It's called aparoksha jnanam. It's not an objectifiable experience. It's the self shining experience, natural experience of my own swarupa, of my own nature. Not something I'm looking at, something I am. And I've recognized I have clarity in that. So the nitya, anitya vastu, vivekaha, becomes clear. The viveka, in terms of what is nitya, I know completely, clearly, with absolute clarity. What is anitya, I know it is an experiential reality. It's not something just in your head. It's not a concept. It's a concept too, but there's a concept, it's a word. Those words are there, all right. But those words land on the reality of yourself as nitya, and the reality of the world as anitya. That viveka is completely clear. And so the vairagya also. Vairagya will resolve with knowledge into the fullness of my being, to an absolute vairagya, which is a vairagya born of my absolute lack of need for anything else. Things are free to be exactly as they are. They are free to come into being and go out of being. I don't have this thing, oh, come, so I can be happy. And then, don't go, so I can be happy. There's a, you know, There's a clinging there to my experience, and the negative of clinging to keep it away, don't get near me. That's also a type of clinging, out of the clinging to myself, my fear that these objects are going to hurt me in one way or the other, either by leaving or by somebody taking them away from me, all of this. So within the world, I gain vairagya, you know, toward this type of clinging more and more and more as my mind matures, and that matures in my knowledge, and it goes and drops and drops and drops as I recognize that what I am actually seeking in all of these clingings is myself, is the wholeness, the fullness, the well-being that actually has nothing to do with these objects. That's why one object can be loved and hated and totally have been deep disinterested in by three people at exactly the same time. One person loves, one person hates, one person has no opinion whatsoever. And by you, any experience, any object can be loved at one time, can be hated at another time, and you can be wonderfully, totally bored with at another time. It's not the object. If the object had any one of these things, this object would always be hated by everybody at all times. This object would always be loved by everybody at all times. And we don't experience that in our individual life or in our group life. So obviously, the object itself is quite innocent. It is does not have these qualities, you know, of raga and dvesha. If I need this to be happy, I need to not have this to be happy. The object doesn't have raga dvesha. You have the raga dvesha. And we have this raga dvesha, this desire, I need this to be happy, and dvesha, I need to get rid of it to be happy. We have this. Why? Because I think that the ananda, that the what I am seeking, exists in the object. What about when I discover and assimilate more, that in fact, what I'm seeking is only my own being? My buddhi recognizes that, and then recognizes it more, and then recognizes it more, until finally there's real clarity there, and then my buddhi never asks anymore for the world to be what it isn't, you know? It's like taking a stone, could you please be a flower? Please change to be a flower. Please change to be a flower. Then I recognize at some point in my delusional mind that actually that's not going to happen because the stone has nothing to do with the flower. I recognize that here. The ananda has nothing to do, really, with the world. It's a grand illusion. All that happens in the world is that when I fulfill a desire because I've superimpose my being, myself on that, the ananda on it. When I fulfill the desire, you know, I want it because I've superimposed my being on it, I want it so badly. When I get it, my mind becomes desireless. And so now it's no longer offering any states of experience that are not resonating with my being. Because it has shanti. And so I feel so happy. That's what I call the 15-second samadhi. I'm so happy until the next thought comes that is full of bhaya, the things that can take it away, or what else I have to have. Don't get too excited about this because you also need this. All this comes. What about as I start to truly assimilate my experience? Then all of this doesn't come. Comes less and less and less. In fact, like a vritya, I want to have that. It either comes as a non-binding desire. If I don't have it, it's fine. But you have a desire, you go after it. But it's fine. If you get it or not get it, it's fine. Or if it has any sting of bindingness to it, these desires, your mind will go, no, let's not go there. That's shama. That's why. I have all these thoughts, desires, funny things happy going through the mind. I decide whether I'm going to go with it or not. That's the shama. That's one, that's the first quality. And then we go to dhamma, uparati, titiksha, shraddha, samadhana. So we're going to go to all of these one at a time. Okay. So here, so what you're going to memorize here, shamadhi, shakta, sampattihi. Right? Say it. Shamadhi. So this wealth, the sixfold wealth begins shatka sixfold, sampattihi, shatka sampattihi. The sixfold wealth, shamadhi, beginning with shama. Okay. So, and then I was, as I kind of went on a little, not tangent exactly, but what I wanted you to understand is that a mumukshu will have this, all of these qualities, the viveka, vairagya, the shamadhi shatka, and the mumukshu twam, the last one, to a good enough degree, and that with this knowledge, you will mature into kind of the absolute nature of that. And that's natural, that your jnanam finishes that off. But you have it in a relative degree. Okay? So the shamadhi shatka, this is the third of the sadhana, chaturshtaya. Let's do the last one. Mumukshutvam cheti. So if I do the sandhi, mumukshutvam cheti. That anuswara, the dot. You have a dot under the M. Mumukshutvam, it'll change because of the cha. But if I break the sandhi, mumukshutvam cha iti. A plus I is A, cheti. So cha iti, cheti. So it says, remember the question is sadhana chaturshtiyam kim? What is the sadhana chaturshtiya? Or does it say sampatti? No. What is the sadhana chaturshtiyam kim? What is the sadhana chaturshtiya? Now it's gone through all of these and it ends with mumukshutvam cha and mumukshutvam and the state of desiring liberation. Mumukshutvam. Twam affix gives an abstract to the noun. So a mumukshu is one who desires, one who desires moksha is a mumukshu, right? Mumukshu twam is the state, that's that condition of desiring liberation. The condition of being one who desires, you're in that condition, you have that mumukshu twam. You have this condition, you know, of being one who desires liberation. Mumukshutvam. Cha means this is the last of the four. Iti means thus. Puts these in quotes because the question is, what is the sadhana chaturshtayam? These are the four. Mumukshutvam, that desire to be liberated from desire. I have a desire to be liberated from desire, a desire to be liberated from insecurity, arta, a desire to be liberated from the desire is kama. Remember, I said I finished this up last class. The what we call the purusharthas, the fourfold arthas, things that we seek, the goals that a human being seeks. They're ultimately the desire of the things that we need, the things that we feel we need to have. Artha is that need for security. Moksha, the mumukshutvam, it's not that I want to accomplish some security here, because there is no such thing. If I have that viveka, there is no security in terms of anything here, because everything is time-bound. Where's the security? If everything is going to come to an end, every security is very temporal and very threatened also. So the more security you need, the more insecure you are. You know, the more security you want, the more insecure you become. Even the more money you gain, the more jewels you gain, the more threatened that money is. Because that money represents security and someone can take it away. Right? And so you become more and more fearful because you have all the security that can be taken away, that can be lost. You have this beautiful, beautiful home that you've put your whole life into, and it's wonderful. It's everything that you've ever wanted. It gives you so much security, so much artha. But anything could happen. It could burn down. An earthquake could flatten it. You could go broke and not be able to pay your mortgage. All of these bhayas, all of these fears raise their head. And so in the end, if I have the viveka, I don't want security, because there is no such thing. I want freedom from insecurity. That is moksha. So I want moksha, liberation from artha itself, from the need for security. I want freedom from insecurity. Kama, also, I want moksha from kama, from this, you know, iha amutra palabhoga viraga. I want liberation from these desires for things here and in the hereafter. I want actually freedom from kama. To think, oh no, I want to go to Swargaloka so I can have all of my desires fulfilled. Or I want life, in fact, this is very Hindu, let me live a very dharmic life so I can accrue punya, a lot of punya, so I can get a better next birth. More artha, more kama, you know, more security, more pleasures. Let me do that. Let me gain that. That becomes my prayer. But not for a mamukshu, which is also part of the knowledge base of the Vedas. I don't want that security. I want to be free of security, free of insecurity. I don't want the security. I want to be free of insecurity, which is so beautiful. I think there's no insecurity. I am whole and complete in myself. I don't really need anything. I am secure. I am the one who's secure. I don't need kama. I don't need desired objects in order to be happy, because I am happy. So I want freedom from desire itself. So moksha, I want moksha really from the artha, moksha from the kama, moksha from dharma. That doesn't mean that I want to be a dharmic. I want to be between this duality of dharma and adharma. I want to be free of the longing for the punya which results from dharma, so that I can have a better next life, so that I can improve myself. Usually when we say artha kama dharma, then that dharma is I'm working for to accrue punya, to avoid papa, so that I can improve my condition. I want to be free from any need to improve my condition. I want to be whole and complete in myself, without having to be negotiating dharma all of the time. So I can avoid being punished, and I can go toward improving my condition. May I be free from all of that. So even though in these purusharthas, we usually say these four, artha, the security, kama, the desire to gain things so that I can have pleasures and happiness, dharma, gaining punya, living a dharmic life so that I can all be secure in improving my condition. And then they usually add moksha as the fourth. Swamiji says, no. We learn, so we have artha, kama, dharma, moksha. No, really? The only thing there is moksha. The only purusharta in the end is moksha. Because let me be free of artha, let me be free of kama, let me be free of dharma. So moksha is really the one that trumps the other three. Because of viveka and vairagya, the temporal nature of these things takes the excitement out of them. They become limitations. You know? Within samsara, this is what I want. But once I become a mumukshu, these are the things that I actually want to be free of that need, free of those desires. To be free of those desires is not to be dead. Let me be free of everything. Let me just kill myself. No. Let me recognize the self, my own being, which is free of all those things. So that viveka, vairagya, the shamadhi shatka, and the mamukshitvam. The mamukshitvam, you know, is that freedom from those limitations, the desire for the freedom from all of those limitations. And then when you look at this word purushartha, which is commonly in the teaching of Vedanta, this word purushartha comes a lot. So the purusharthas are those really human desires in four big categories. If we put moksha over as term for the mumuksha, is the one who wants to be free of these three major categories that cover so many. It's like three big baskets of different types of desires, really. So you have the artha, the desire to be secure in all of its ramifications, the desire to have pleasures, the desire to become happy, this becoming secure, becoming happy, becoming better, this becoming, these desires, this threefold basket of desires, may I move into moksha, may I be free of those. Right? So the purushartha, the purushartas, the moksha, sometimes we say like this, the first three, the artha, kama, dharma, these first three are for the samsari. The last one is for the mumukshu. The samsari has not realized yet the limitations of these artha, kama, dharma. He has not realized that. And so is seeking these in order to have a happy, full life. Whereas the mumukshu is the one who actually wants to be released from these desires, these three baskets of desire. Okay. I think that's it. And that's it.
Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.